Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Print Community Forum. Everyone's doing well this afternoon. And, my name is Brian Ellis. I'm the director of the Canadian Printing Industries Association. Welcome you here today. And I'd like to introduce our next guest speaker, Dr. Joe Webb. He's speaking today and tomorrow. I would say he's our keynote speaker, actually. And Joe's one of the industry's most respected forecasters. I always consider him the barometer of the printing industry, and I always look forward to his reports. His latest book, This Point Forward, was written with Richard Romano, reveals that by 2020, the marketplace for print and other media will be completely different, and not what the industry is currently structured for. As we talked about all day about change, 2020 is nearly here. Will you be ready? Dr. Webb asks. So please give a welcome hand for Dr. Joe Webb.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back in Toronto. I haven't been here for 3 or 4 years, and I'm glad to be here at the show and happy to show support to Mr. Mulcahy and everyone who's involved. As many of you know, in the States, I'll ask. In the States, how do they refer to me?
Dr. Doom.
Doom. Okay, so I won't let you down for the first 4 slides, and then we'll get into some other good stuff. But the Doomish stuff will be done in a very appropriate and tasteful way, and also be done using data from Statistics Canada. So that's... don't blame me, I'm just bringing you data that you folks paid for. All right, here goes. We've had far more than a decade of restructuring of the commercial printing market because print exists in an overall media market. And it's had a tremendous effect on the nature, the size, the scope, and the management styles of printing businesses throughout the world, but... throughout North America. And one of the themes that I want to stress is that we make our investments in technology and people in response to a perception that we have about the marketplace and the way that we see that marketplace unfolding. And long ago, we were certain that there would always be print, it would always be a certain size, scope, and nature, and that's the way we made our investments, that's the way we looked at the way we managed our businesses, and it shaped our expectations, of course. But then along came something called the Internet, and that was just the first thing that got rolling and made us start to think about things differently. So I would like to put up this slide. I like presenting data in ways that people have not seen before, and you've probably never seen commercial printing shipments on an inflation-adjusted basis. Very few people do that. I'll show you how to do that later for your own companies. Nor have you seen it on a per-person or per-capita basis. So the red lines are how much commercial printing revenues or shipments were in Canada for the period of time from 1992 to our estimate for 2014. The blue lines are not adjusted for inflation. So you can see how inflation changes our perception of history and how when we start removing it, we start to see a totally different picture of things. Basically, the consumption of print in Canada peaked in 2001 when it was $481 in at that time. It peaked in the U.S. in 1995. So this is like a six-year gap. It's another reminder that it's a habit of a lot of executives in the international or multinational printing businesses. Like, oh, Canada's 10% of the U.S., which is close enough if you're having a discussion over lunch or over dinner or over a couple of drinks, but it minimizes the differences in the way this economy operates compared to others. So there was a six-year difference in that. And also, in the U.S., the number keeps going down. Here in Canada, it seems to have stabilized at this particular level, even though it is lower than in 1992. Right now in the U.S., the per capita consumption of commercial printing is lower than it was in 1972. So it's really a drop down quite considerably. If these data were available for earlier than this, and I wish they were, but unfortunately they're not, it gives a greater appreciation for the 1980s in our business, because we had the process color explosion and the digital prepress explosion that actually lowered the cost of print during that period and just created a massive increase in the amount of printing used. Also, at the same time, because our databases about consumers and all were getting a lot easier to use, now we take a lot of our databases for granted, but at that time it was new. The idea of targeting print to a particular audience was something that just seemed a bit out of reach at that time. We could target in groups of 10,000 in the 1980s. Now, of course, we can target in groups of one. Through this restructuring of the business, it's been interesting the way it's affected here in terms of the data from Stats Canada. The number of printing businesses with 100 or more employees is down about a third, as is the number of businesses with 1 to 4 employees. But the middle group, and unfortunately Stats Canada doesn't break it out more than 5 to 99 employees, which you could drive several trucks and oil tankers through that. But that's only down 8.3%. So this tells us that the mid-size commercial printer is actually doing a little bit better than the other parts of the business. Now, how does the 5 to 99 group grow or decrease less? Well, part of it might be the 100-plus employees companies downsizing into this particular area. But overall, in this period from 2003 to 2012, you've got about 1,200 fewer establishments and over 22,000 fewer employees. It actually is a lot less dire than some of the things that we've seen in the U.S. Now, these will be the only U.S. data that I'll show here because I haven't been able to find Canada data for this, but this is from the Printing Industries of America Financial Ratios Study. And how many of you are familiar with this this report? You've probably seen it in you're afraid to say that I read something from the U.S. which I hope doesn't affect the sales of this, right? It is probably, I mean, all research has flaws, and the printing industry's financial ratios has some flaws to it. Granted, it's the only longitudinal study of the printing industry that spans multiple decades. It's got fascinating data in it. And this particular data is, what is the percentage of profits of total sales of printing companies? And they have a category called the profit leaders, which is the top 25%. And they've always published that. It wasn't until in recent years they started to publish the other businesses. Then you start to realize only the companies in the top 24% make any money. The others don't. Now, we can get into a discussion about, well, you know, tax laws in the U.S. mean that you should minimize your bottom line and take the money as salary so that you're taxed overall. We can get into all that kind of stuff. But it's very, very clear the profit leaders are making a lot of money compared to everyone else. And in periods of time where the economy is really tough, the gap between the profit leaders and everyone else actually expands. So even though their profits may go down, the range just widens so that the companies that are not run as well do a lot worse than the profit leaders. And over time, as we've studied many of these businesses, most of them are the same businesses from year to year, and you can't point at one specific thing that they do better than others. They do everything a little bit better than their competitors. And it all ends up cascading down to the bottom line. We'll talk about a little more of that later. But this is the picture of a print business owner And I kept it clean because I know a lot of print business owners look at this marketplace and would prefer to say something like that. There are so many choices and so many competitors, and the budgets are tighter, and we're not really in great understanding of who's managing these budgets and what they're looking for. One thing I've done, I've moved to North Carolina over the past couple of years. I got active in the American Marketing Association chapter there. And what's striking is of the 20 or so meetings I've gone to, I've only heard the word print mentioned 3 times. And the youth, I'm speaking as someone in their late 50s, even though it looks older, and shinier. The people with budgets now who have expectations for ROI is going to be a big part of our discussion, and pleasing their bosses, especially CFOs, about measuring the effectiveness of communications, it's really, really quite different. And if there's anything, there's a generation gap between many of our print business salespeople and the people who are making communications decisions, and we're just not connecting with them. That is a real, real problem for us, especially when it comes down to topics like marketing automation. They know what marketing automation is. Many of our salespeople do not know what marketing automation is. When we were writing this new book, one thing I did was I went on the road a little bit, and I was talking to groups of printers trying to test out some of the new material, kind of like a comedian goes on the road, I guess. And I asked people if they knew what marketing automation was or heard of it. None of the printers in the audience had, and I mentioned some of the companies involved in it, like HubSpot and Marketo and old Loqua, companies like that. They had never heard of companies like these, and so to show the gap of knowledge that exists there, because these decisions based on analytics and ROI are going away from print unnecessarily because we're not in the game talking to these folks in the language that they really understand. So in this kind of situation of all those roads and all those decisions, what does a print business do? And the answer from me is to remember that print is a medium and a print business is something totally different. We get caught up in what's the future of print, but I'm more concerned about the print business, the people it supports, the entrepreneurs who created it, and the relevance of that organization, and what does that organization do in the future, if it's wed to print or not. Print will be around, but we need to be very, very creative in the way that we use it, and the way we propose it, and the way that it gets integrated into other media. So it's very hard for people to separate themselves, especially if they came from the trade and they got into printing because they love the smell of the ink, they love the magic that occurs on a press, which I still think no one has a good explanation for how anything gets printed. I forget what GATF published years ago, that there are like something like 700 variables on a press. Are you kidding? Stuff can come out of that and we can control all those kinds of things? Yes, we can. A printing press is just absolutely magical. And if you're caught up in that and you love that, that's fine, but you've got to be very upfront about it because it is something worth understanding and worth being in, but everything that surrounds it has to be very, very much different. So years ago, prior to the internet and prior to lots of things, basically marketers had 2 major choices. They were either going into print or broadcast, and it's basically 100 years that we have broadcast, and we have print obviously a lot longer, and so they were in these 2 major categories. Public relations was really focused on print and broadcast and didn't exist separately with media that it could use by itself. So then all this electronic stuff happens, and now we have, pay attention to the 2 slides. I don't want to make you hungry yet, but the pizza is basically the same size, but it gets sliced up in different ways, and we don't necessarily always know if we're getting a larger response than the times that we had in only the 2 basic decisions. So you have to work harder. You've got to manage more media in order to get the same kind of results, even though the pie is basically the same. That is a very difficult position to be in, because we like to do that. I'd like to go back to the 1980s just for my hair, but I don't know if I really want to go back there for everything else, but I know that a lot of media planners would love to be back in that particular time. The other thing that's happened, and this is from talking with some of the folks at the AMA and then, you know, talking to others involved in the business, there's a lot more meddling when it comes to the budget. Part of it is everybody uses the internet. So now everybody used to think they knew about marketing. Now everybody knows they know something about marketing because they have data. And that's not always the best position to be in. But the CFO is showing up at more and more marketing meetings. And if it's not the CFO, it's someone on the CFO's staff. And what do they demand? Well, they're demanding repeatable and provable results for what you're doing. It's not like the old Mad Men days where you come up with a great idea and you can kind of surround it with discussions about what the marketplace is, and the CFO would just throw up their hands and say, I don't understand this kind of stuff, I'll go back to figuring out what's on the income statement. But nowadays, there's such a culture of measurement and bringing things down to a data level that everybody thinks that they can measure and predict what are the natural and unpredictable choices of a marketplace. But it gives us the illusion of predictability, and that's what the CFOs are looking for. So it comes down to ROI. When you talk to folks about ROI, no one knows anything. We know that if we take finance in school, you take the results of your investment divided by the total investment, and that's your ROI. And it's usually expressed as a percentage. And very often, media campaigns are calculated in that particular way. The part of the industry that taught us about ROI years and years ago was the direct marketing business, because they measured exactly, we mailed so many out, we got so many orders back, this was the average order size, and even catalogers used to measure their effectiveness based on the square inches of page that a particular product was featured on in the catalog. So the direct marketing business taught us all those kinds of things. So here's the concern about ROI. The first thing is, are our budgets being used effectively? This is a judgment call. This isn't always an analytical call. Whether or not our messages are reaching the target audience, well, we know what Google Analytics and other things tell us about who opened what web page or who opened a particular email, a marketing email that may have been sent out. Also, engagement. We may be looking at certain levels of social media activity. It was just a few years ago that Pepsi decided to reallocate its budget to social media, got incredible scores on Facebook and Twitter and other areas, but sales actually went down. So they were engaged, but they weren't buying soda. Revenues. Very often, marketing campaigns are judged by how will the change in revenue be. It's not really a return on investment, but it's how did revenue change when the campaign was on. This next one, flexibility, is something that marketers will always talk about when it comes to digital media. They perceive print as having great risk because it's all upfront cost, especially if it's a direct mail campaign, where you have to go out and you're not certain what's coming back. And they're always saying that when they go out with a digital media campaign of some kind, within a couple of days they know how it's doing and they can change it. If it's doing really well, they can intensify it. If it's doing really badly, they can change the message, they can test it. And that's another thing. It's very, very easy to test. They can do their A-B tests or A-B-C tests and really target what they're doing. So they treat the flexibility as part of a return on investment. And then finally, the emotional ROI. I look like a hero in front of my boss. And that is something that salespeople are very often aware of, but not many other folks. But if you're in a sales situation, you've already experienced many times where you work really hard on the deal and somebody does well because they made that deal, and that's something that you should be looking to do. So here are my 8 ideas for this kind of marketplace. I've never lived in Boston, but I drove in Boston. I swear I've seen this sign someplace. downtown. All right, here goes. The first thing for us to learn how to compete in this market is to recognize that print is not essential to communication strategy. What is the bottom line of a communication strategy? It's ideas, and then those ideas are deployed. But also, if you embrace this concept, it means that you sell to the marketplace in a totally different way. In the past, when it was just print and broadcast, or we knew that everybody needed print, you could go and be successful in the marketplace either by having different costs than everyone or having better equipment than everyone, because print was part of that allocation. Now it's not. Print is often secondary. And the question is, how do we know what kind of print is used? And it requires a different relationship and a different strategic outlook for the business in order to participate in this marketplace. The younger managers, the people who are 35 and 40 years old, who I'm seeing at the AMA meetings, they're not looking at print's history. They're not looking at a whole lot of things that we would consider to be very important. They're looking at, how do we reach a marketplace? How are we going to measure it? And what are we going to do? So if we go to the marketplace saying our product is not necessarily needed by that marketplace, that's supposed to spark some kind of entrepreneurial creativity on our part that says, how do we change that factor? How do we make it more valuable? How do we understand our clients and our prospects in a way that allows us to be participants in an overall campaign or overall communication strategy that makes a lot more sense for them, especially if what they're looking for is to increase the use of digital media? Digital media has often very horrible response rates, and lists go out of date very, very quickly. But print can be a good way of keeping those kinds of activities very, very much up to date and keep reminding people that they are available for them. So it changes the kind of people you hire, it changes the kind of investments that you make, it changes the kind of training that you give to folks. The second one is that there are real opportunities in media development, what I call deployment, which is how messages get out to a marketplace, and then managing that. If you've read Renewing the Printing Industry, the first book, or Disrupting the Future, you know that I particularly like a business strategy called communications logistics that will come up later. Not all printers can do this kind of work because they don't have that whole picture of the communications marketplace. And that's okay, because there are many ways to be successful in this business. It's a question of picking the right strategy. And if you're uncomfortable with this kind of stuff, there's still a place for you in the business, in working with others who have this kind of specialty. So this is not a death knell kind of thing for printers. It's understanding what the right place is. But this is the opportunity that we've seen, is that print is one medium among many. And in managing media, we're recognizing that the key resource of our clients is not just money, it's also time. And managing these things is very, very difficult. This particular chart I usually do to scare people, and you may have seen it in some of our other books. I like making it really small because I kind of laugh when the audience squints. But I'm going to walk off the stage very quickly. You'll still be able to hear me. I'll go down this way. Neither side looks safe. Excuse me. All right. Back when I went to school, the dinosaurs had just died. Okay? So we had offline, we had push and pull marketing. You remember push and pull marketing, right? I got to get out of the glare. It bounces off my head and the entire room lights up. All right, but you remember push and pull marketing, where push is the old style, you know, slap somebody on the shoulder, get out and sell stuff. And pull was the creation of branding and creating images in a marketplace and giving people reasons to come to your business because they understood the product because of ways that you interacted with them. Then 1995 comes, Netscape goes public, everybody hears about the internet, and we get this online column. So we now have push and pull, offline and online. And then 2006, 2007 comes along, and you get what I call participative media, which is down at the bottom. What's participative media? It's social media, but I'll let you in on a little consulting secret. You like to create things that look like you've given them an incredible amount of thought. So if you have three things that start with P, people will think you're smart. So that's why we picked participative, and that's what social media is. But the idea is, how can participative be underneath offline? Well, social media gives us another context to think of things. We never thought of this event that we're in as part of social media before, but it actually is. We used to have seminars and workshops and association meetings and gatherings like this. That was always part of social media. Now we've added a different kind of technology to it, but they work together. So some of the specialization that printing organizations can come from this chart. If you say, I don't understand all this digital stuff, I'm going to leave it to the teenagers, you focus on the offline column. There's nothing wrong with being an offline media specialist, because as we know, in the signage industry, in the packaging industry, in the events business, there's all kinds of things that can go on in there that you can be very lucrative. But the question is, how are you going to focus on it? So that's the way to use this particular chart. It's appeared in various books before. It's even up online. And we're going to make these slides available as well. Third, print workflow. Sometimes seems very complex. Sometimes it seems dangerous. But with the knowledge and experience that we have with print workflow, we actually have an advantage with many of the folks who work in digital media. I mean, working in digital media is kind of cool, but in the printing business, we know that jobs have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and what occurs at the end? The invoice, right? We know that we work with a client to get the job started, figure out what it is, then we produce the job, then it goes to the end. But sometimes in digital media, jobs never end, and it's hard to get practitioners to let them go. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. But when it comes time to managing multiple kinds of media, I think if we're well-trained in print workflow and we could actually accept ourselves as being legitimate practitioners in this kind of media logistics, it would serve us very, very well. Very often, the only people who don't believe that we can be in digital media are us, not everybody else. We seem to be our biggest barrier in that regard. Here's where some of the opportunity is, and I think a major opportunity for us, is with small and mid-sized businesses. We were always striving to get to that Fortune 500 company or the biggest company in town. And that was very, very good in the old style of printing business when everybody used print and everybody needed print. But there's a real communications lacking among small businesses. They don't have time. Owners and some of their key people really don't have the knowledge or the ability or the time to get involved with all these different media. It was hard for them when the pizza only had two slices. Now that it's got 8 and 10 and 12 and whatever, they don't understand these kinds of things. It used to be that the main budget of a very small business might be a Yellow Pages ad, but what is it today? They got to run a Facebook page, they got to run a website, they need a wrap for their vehicle, they need signage in the store, they need all kinds of things that's part of their media mix. They don't even know that they have a media communications mix. And now they do. And who's going to manage all that for them? Who's going to advise them on all those kinds of things? I believe it can be us. This also means that we sell a little bit differently. We're used to billing out by the job and how much time that particular job took. But many printers have found that they can do extremely well by charging on a retainer basis where they're supplying many of these kinds of services to them. Who's the biggest obstacle to selling on a retainer basis to the marketplace? Very often it's us. Why? Because the same thing that made us good at workflow, jobs have a beginning, a middle, and an end, are also mean that we like to invoice that way. It's a job, it's all done, now we're going to invoice it. We're not used to this idea of a client paying us $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 a month and charging against that and including management advisory as part of that. Many of the graphic designers have come to that. They have a very, very good understanding of their role in the process. It would be good if we did too. The fifth one is something I said back in the Renewing the Printing Industry days. That book started to be written around 2003 and finally got into print around 2007. But this one confused the folks. Stay ahead of the clients, ignore your competitors. Now, why did that confuse people? Well, when the printing industry was really, really thriving, one of the ways that we minimized our investment risk was by looking to our left and looking to our right and seeing what kind of equipment our competitors had. And if they were doing well with it, that became part of the justification for us making that investment as well. We don't have that situation anymore. Investing is more risky now than ever because we're dealing with a traditional market that's declining and then new opportunities in digital printing and digital media that are growing, and we don't know exactly how that's going to play out. And we don't know exactly the kind of people and the kind of tools that we're going to have for that. The only way to get a handle on that is to start having discussions with our clients. Many of us are not used to having discussions with our clients. Many of us have relied on our salespeople to have discussions with the clients, and who did they know? Well, we wouldn't know who they knew because they were always very protective of who exactly their contacts of the companies were. It turns out that we need to have 2 and 3 contacts above and below the main contact in the companies in order to understand them. That makes some of our salespeople actually shudder and really worry about whether or not we're trying to undermine them. But we don't have to go to the company to do that. We just have to be where they are. For example, if you're working with some small and mid-sized businesses and you know the owners and the upper management are very active in the Chamber of Commerce or other or associations related to the kind of businesses that they're in, go do that. Don't send a sales rep. Send somebody higher up or somebody in a different position so they get to be familiar with your company in a totally different context. This is a strategy. It's got to be really planned out. You've got to discover where they go, why they go, what trade shows they go to, what they read, all those kinds of things. It takes a lot of work. Now, because of this whole ROI thing and the CFO who wants to spend time going into the marketing person's meetings, we got to stay ahead of them too. So you've got to stay ahead of your client, your contact with the client, but also their boss. You have to be sensitive to the kinds of things that they are, the pressures that they are under. So in the long run, it's the business relationship that creates the value, not the medium or media that are used. And what I mean by that is the reliability, the advice, the counsel, the skill at deployment, the skill at implementation, those are the things that really build value in a relationship. And as more and more companies have gone into the retainer basis or developing special programs for clients that are unique to that particular client, the harder it is for that client to get out of that relationship, and the greater desire, if it's being done well, for them to expand the relationship. So it's a different kind of selling. This is no longer the traditional 1970s, you know, knock on the door of the company, ask for somebody who's in charge of printing decisions, oh, that's so-and-so, Mrs. Smith or whatever, say, well, I'm going to leave my business card, I'm going to staple a copy of my equipment list to it. Could you give it to her? I mean, there are people who still do that. I don't want to, don't like saying that. That's different. That doesn't work. That doesn't create a relationship. So they have to see you in a totally different context. And that's what starts to do it. Seventh, and this is from talking to all kinds of folks, not just the AMA people. You've got to look like you're a real business nowadays. How do you look like you're a real business? Well, you have an online presence. You're not necessarily in social media if it doesn't work for you or whatever, but you're demonstrating some kind of competence in that you're using these tools yourself. If you're familiar with a company like HubSpot and Marketo and some of those companies who deliver marketing automation tools, you know, advertising agency revenues are up because they're buying enterprise versions of those software programs and they're reselling them to their clients. We can do those kinds of things too. The most important companies who should be using marketing automation are us, so that we get some kind of experience in doing that and dealing with all these different kind of media. Even sometimes if those media are not truly appropriate to our business, we want to be able to say that we have some experience in them. I used to tell a joke about many years ago when Facebook was new, that that a company wanted to hire someone with 10 years of Facebook experience. Well, this is 2014. You can't hire somebody with 10 years of Facebook experience. But you can hire somebody who's had Facebook experience working with 20 different clients. So you're looking for a real diversity of experience. If you're hiring somebody who's been in digital media, you want that diversity of experience because you never know exactly what tools or applications are going to be necessary. But most important is that you have some kind of presence in this, even if you're not supplying these kinds of services, because this is the way they're finding you. Had a really interesting discussion a few months ago with someone who was active, who's a printing business in a big metro area. And they had, they were starting to do a good wide format business, but they weren't getting much business anymore. They kind of flattened out. What they realized from talking to people from whom they were not getting business, this was a part of an industry that was making a lot of spur-of-the-moment decisions because things were coming up very, very quickly. And they needed to react very, very quickly. So how were they choosing the printers for their displays and for the presentations that they were doing to agencies, associations, and other groups? Google Maps. This was the first time that I heard of somebody choosing printers on the basis of Google Maps. And the reason was they were making a very quick decision. They needed to talk to someone right away, and their first inclination was, who's close? So what did this printer do? He wanted to keep his facility out in the suburbs. He opened a very, very small sales office in this town because as long as he had an address in that town and a phone number, it would show up in Google Maps. The place wasn't even always staffed, but it became a meeting area where they could go in and meet with people in this particular geography, and his sales started to go up in double digits, significant double digits again, because they found out how people were finding their business. And that was a case of them using the modern media in their business, and now they can counsel them on that. This next one is an investment aspect of it. The marketing life of equipment is shorter than its technology or operational life. There was a time, and they were good times. You got a 10-year lease on a press. You worked it for another 10 years after the lease was done, and then you sold the press as part of your retirement. Okay? Now, with the nature of print changing so much, this I guess a basic explanation would be like in 1997, 1998, there was a big purchase of sheet-fed presses still around that particular time. By the time 2003 came along, the internet had changed things so much that a lot of printers really started to have financial problems, and a lot of those presses came back. So what was that? Well, they had an expectation and an assumption about the future that print would be about the same, and the nature of things that they were producing were going to be about the same. So they were different. It turned out in a different way. So then if they were able to keep the equipment, then they were running jobs that were inappropriate for the equipment that they owned, which increased their fixed costs, which meant their profits started to erode, but they were able to hang on to the equipment. But overall, we should be thinking that since the marketing life is shorter than the operational life, we want to turn over our equipment faster. Because there's one very important law of printing economics. If you don't use the equipment you have, it lasts longer. I'm waiting for that to sink in. Right? So if you don't use your equipment, it will last a very, very long time. And you can all be very, very happy about that. So even though there are some of you are vendors in this room, I'd like you to cover your ears. And so there are some vendors out there, don't tell them I said this. One of the biggest crimes that you can commit on a financial health basis is by buying too much equipment. You want to buy less equipment than you need, and you want to wear it out. You're better off running three shifts on less equipment and wearing it out and turning it over than thinking about, oh yeah, but if we buy another one, we'd only have to run one shift. Send work out to others and build a business in something new that you're planning to invest in before you actually buy that piece of equipment. Because you're going to be faced with a situation much like that printer in 1998 was. They were trying to sell in a 2008 market with 1998 equipment that didn't fit the marketplace. You don't want to be in that position. So what do you do now? Well, from a strategic standpoint, how many of you know what this device is? That's a rear view mirror. That is the way most budgeting and strategic planning is done, not just in printing companies, but with all companies. Because what's the first question they ask? Well, what have we done the last 3 years? That's not the issue in strategic planning. That may be the issue for cash planning or some kind of tactical planning, but it's not for marketing planning, and it's not for long-term business planning. So the rearview mirror, while it may be helpful now and then, is really the wrong place, a wrong thing to use. It's not the tool you want. I have this bad, dark feeling. Maybe I should talk to a shrink about this. That there's going to be some other kind of digital wave coming. I almost have the feeling, for just from looking at the data, the same way I feel around that I did around 2007, and then we saw 2009 was just, it wasn't just an economic thing that was going on. It was a media thing that was going on. I'm starting to get those kinds of feelings. So you want to be prepared for that. You want to look at your business and for 2018, 2020, what kind of business do we want to be in? What kind of people do we need? What will the products we'll be offering? And do not be afraid to confront the issue of consolidation and being acquired or whatever, because let's put it this way. If you love the smell of the ink and the technology, find a company to acquire your business who needs that, who needs that kind of passion about that kind of thing, rather than trying to force yourself into the kind of market that's coming. The same thing, when you're doing some kind of consolidation, make the consolidations forward-looking. I'll have a little bit more about that. Look for product openings that you have, that you may need. I mentioned before about inflation adjusting in the business. If you're going to do the rearview mirror stuff, you might as well do it the right way. So these are the multipliers based on Statistics Canada Consumer Price Index. So if you're going to do the backward-looking stuff about what have we done the past 3 or 4 years, these are the numbers you multiply by. So that you multiply your 2010 numbers by 1.07, that gives you the value of them in dollars today. If any of you do this in your companies? Oh, good. Okay. This is my advice. Make sure the plant is empty. Okay, it's just you. Okay? All right. I hope you know Excel. Okay? I hope you're sitting down when you do this. Make sure the bottle is new and the contents are old. Make sure the ice is fresh. Because after you do this, you're going to realize, I thought we were growing, but gosh, we're not. Or I thought we were flat, or gosh, we're not. And you just kind of look at the numbers and look at the glass, and then you act. First on the glass. Okay? Because this is sometimes a shock for folks. So do this. And do this in your own personal financial planning, too, because the two biggest obstacles to investing well are always inflation and taxes. Here's your chance to do this in all kinds of business and become your own company's Dr. Doom. So what are the strengths of a new printing business going forward? It's integrated media. Whether or not you produce the integrated media, print is going to be part of some kind of larger messaging campaign. One of our biggest selling points? That we're systematic because of our workflow, and we have a discipline about our workflow. We are predictable. And then the last part is something that we have to work on, the measurable results. We've always been afraid to ask about the measurable results. Did that campaign work for you? We were more concerned about, did the job meet your quality expectations? Not what the job actually did. Why were we did not care about that? Well, we didn't care because we were not responsible for the content. Right? So if we're not responsible for the content, what are we left with? Well, what was the image reproduction quality? Now we've got to get our hands dirty a little bit and get a little involved with the content and actually understand enough to give some advice to our clients. Consolidation is going to be constant in this. Why is consolidation important? Because it reallocates the resources of the industry, just speaking from an economic basis. It removes resources from an unproductive area and moves them to a place where they're going to be more productive. That's the idea. Also, because the financial strength of any printing organization is actually a competitive weapon. It doesn't just deliver better income to its owners, but it's a competitive weapon against competitors because it gives you a freedom of action in the decisions that you make, especially competitively, or proactively with other businesses that earns you the kind of respect and gives you an actionable nature of the kinds of things that you do that other companies cannot do. Secondly, you want your consolidation or your activities so that you're going where the marketplace will be in the future. You don't want two unhealthy printing companies who do the same exact kind of thing merge together and expect that all of a sudden, magically, a healthy printing company will emerge. Because how did they get unhealthy in the first place? Well, not always because of the financial stuff or the equipment stuff, because they weren't making decisions appropriate for the marketplace. They got backed into a corner. So you always want to be looking for a consolidation partner that gives some kind of forward process to where you're going. So that's a defensive consolidation where two companies say, oh, we don't understand the marketplace, let's get together and huddle in the corner and hope that something good happens. You don't want that. You want offensive. You want to go on to be aggressive in the marketplace with it. Look for skills that broaden your product line, give you a range of new customers, and remember that there's always a sales cycle involved. If you can find a company that already has good relationships with its customers but is lacking something on the digital media side, on the event side, or on the signage side, your sales process is shorter. So you could actually bring people along in that a lot better than starting from scratch. That's one of the things that is very, very important. People underestimate the cost of a sales process. There's another factor that I think really needs to change, and I'm starting to see it in the printing business. We are used to working with other printers. In fact, we have a trade printer outside for over, right? We're used to going to them when we don't have time, we don't have the right equipment, but that's part of the history of our business, is to be in trade services. If you go into any city that had an old printing business, the one I'm familiar with is New York, where going down to Varick Street, there used to be printers and binders and plate makers and separators all in the same building. They had an internet back then in the 1930s and 1940s. That internet was the freight elevator, right? They moved jobs back and forth. They moved people. They had scuttlebutt about what's going on in the business, what's going on with clients. That freight elevator was the most dynamic part of those kinds of buildings. And everybody worked together in that. That's how all these litho clubs got started in the big cities and the like. So they were used to assigning tasks to each other and billing them and knowing that they would go for a larger job. But that's exactly it. It was tasks. Now, I believe the way the marketplace is headed, we can't afford to just be doing tasks. We can't just look for the kind of skill that we don't have to complete a particular job. We need some kind of richer relationship. The main reason being that capital is scarce. And capital is not just financial. Capital is people, knowledge, skills. You can't find those on balance sheets. You can start to get a sense of them in income statements a little bit over the long term, but you really can't find those in a forward-looking way. So the way this goes is, you may be working with some people who help you fulfill some kind of tasks, but if you start developing products and joint approaches on projects, that's your next step. But finally, you are looking for strategic partners. It may not be a consolidation. You may have a strategic relationship with a certain group of web developers or other software developers or people who might be involved in a particular industry where you have no real mutual interest other than those particular kinds of things, but you invest in them. because it's a lot more expensive for a printer to hire a web development staff and try to get business on that, but it's easier if you own 25% of a web development company and then you start working with them on those projects that make sense, where you're jointly investing in things. So it's not just you're owning equipment together, possibly, but you might be deciding that, okay, if you buy the wide format printer, we're going to be getting involved in this particular technology. We will work together in these kinds of things, because why would you only want one company to buy the wide format printer? Why? Because you want the equipment to wear out and get turned over quickly so that it's always on top of that. So you start developing this network of capabilities. If a consolidation isn't going to start happening, start working on your alliances. Start working with people on like an 18-month basis so that you know that you can trust them. Because that last item there under strategic, you have a level of trust that you don't mind one of these people, one of these organizations, going into a client worried that they may undermine your business. Why? Because it's your business jointly. It's your project jointly. It's your capabilities jointly that you're looking at. This is the way I believe that we will protect ourselves against the next digital wave, by running, having a respect for the capital that we have and sharing the capital between businesses well beyond the task basis that we always know that job we can get folded at this particular company because they have the equipment and we don't. It should be more that we co-invested with this company and we were able to go deliver products and capabilities that we would never have been able to afford ourselves. The other thing that happens is that, as mentioned earlier, is that as media becomes more complex, we get more and more involved in business development and rather than just traditional sales. Business development is a much longer-term approach. I've spoken with a number of printers who have done this, and their sense is that you got to create a separate team, and you have to be looking at about a 3-year transition for that team to actually get on the ground and actually be working well in this particular area. And I'll give you some examples, but let's look at the old way and the business development way. Traditional sales always was based on known products and suppliers. You know, we produce such and such, and then you know us, so whenever you need this, come to us. Well, if that product is not needed as often, you've got a sales issue. But the buyer was actually always in control of that. They only called you when they needed you. And it was very easy to measure how things were going. You measured it on print quality we discussed, how quick the turnaround was going to be and what the price was. That's basically the traditional push sales process. Creating business or business development is different. Let me give you an example of a printer I'm familiar with. They were doing a lot of business in the insurance industry, but they knew it was starting to disappear. So what they did was they hired a marketing person, not for their business, but they hired a marketing person with experience in the insurance industry. Because sitting on that side of the desk, they had a good understanding of what the marketing and sales challenges were for that particular class of business. So when they went to visit some of their clients, they were able to have a totally different kind of discussion other than what kind of printing are you going to need. They were able to talk about classes of customers, competition, the nature of their problems in terms of renewals or prospects or whatever, and then they would start to design complete programs from beginning to end that would solve some of those problems. What they found was the jobs had much higher margins, the pricing tended to be unquestioned, and it was very easy for them to get repeat business because they could point at something very specific in that company that they were able to do. This is not ROI in the generic sense. This is ROI sitting down with the client to develop the program, getting their buy-in, and how do they measure ROI? It's whatever the two of you decided it was going to be. If we reach this particular goal, we will have X amount of revenue, which will deliver X amount of margin with that. That's how we will determine whether or not this is successful. Well, if we meet those particular goals, are you planning to do it again? Yes, we would plan to do that again. We'd be willing to sign a contract and all that. So That's what they're doing. It took them 3 years to get that implemented. Now they're working on other industries as they find either them in their customer base or they find the right people to do it. These people are not paid on commission. And I've never been happy with the way our industry pays on commission, because when you pay people on commission, it means that you're stuck with whatever the old strategy was. It's very hard to make a change. So these folks are paid on bonus, end of year bonus. I'd much prefer a whole company be paid on bonus. But that is how they are paid, because they go in as a team. You can't always point at one person who actually made the sale. They're going with a direct mail expert. They're going with the insurance industry expert. They're going in with a database expert. They're going in as three or four people are having meetings with this particular company. And it just makes for an overall much, much better and much more protected kind of sale from competition. It's also important to have the right sense of costs. I know during various economic problems, the first thing that you do is try to cut costs and figure out and prioritize where you're going to be. But it becomes very simple to mistake market changes with economic changes. So if there's an economic downturn, one of the worst things that can happen to you is that there's a media change at the same time. That's exactly what happened to our industry in 2009, 2010 or so. So I knew many owners who said, well, I'm going to wait it out. And they hunkered down. That's the phrase I always use. They hunkered down. What happens? Basically, the company's strategy becomes frozen. But the marketplace keeps changing. And the technology keeps changing. And the competition keeps changing. But you're there frozen, hunkered down, waiting for things to get better. So you're going to take an out-of-date company and try to go on the marketplace when things are better, and it's not going to match. So you should be focused on changing your costs, because a cost is a lot different than an expense. A cost is something you expect some kind of return from, so you want to change those and hope that you do that. I've seen many companies who are really, really great and very, very productive on shop floors and create lots of margin there and then blow it elsewhere in the company. They can't get an invoice out on time. They have trouble managing paper inventories. They have lots of job turnover and all that. But the stuff that comes off the floor is absolutely great. You do not want to be highly efficient at producing products no one wants. Okay? That's a bad place to be. And especially you don't want to be highly profitable on the floor when so many other things have to happen. Now, one of the things I've gotten involved in, some of you may have seen a little logo there before. I've gotten involved in a cloud venture, which we're still working on, and Mr. Appel is involved in it as part of our team. I've just been really intrigued with this cloud stuff, and I've started to realize very early on, cloud computing is much more than a buzzword. It disrupts everything. We've been getting our email, if you have Gmail or Yahoo Mail or any of those, you've been getting your email in the cloud for years already. And then when you get a company like Adobe, I'm going to jump ahead a slide here. Adobe already has 2.8 million subscribers to Creative Cloud, paying just under $60 a month. And they expect that to be breaking 3 million, if it hasn't already, by the end of this year. And then they made some acquisitions on the marketing automation side, one of which was a company called Neolane that they paid $600 million for. That division already is up to almost $300 million just in one quarter alone. And they have some clients paying almost $500,000 per year for this particular service that they're offering. It's rather amazing. How do all these things happen? Well, there's three major technological trends. I will walk through them because the numbers might be a little hard to see, and the numbers may be hard to believe. Up in the right-hand corner there, bandwidth costs. This is the price, dollars per thousand of megabytes per second. In 1999, it was over $1,200. Last year, it fell to $16. Underneath it, storage costs. This is how, one of the ways that we know a lot about companies like Dropbox and all that. Storage costs, 1992, were $600 per gigabyte, almost $600. It's now 2 cents per gigabyte. And over here, the computing costs, which is dollars per million of transistors. In 1990, it was $527 U.S. for a million transistors. Today, it is 5 cents. These things are just absolutely relentless. This is the real cause of what's happened to the nature of print demand, because there are so many replacements based on these kinds of technologies. So in thinking about what happens to our business, you know, we do all this great stuff on the production side, and the production benefits greatly from these kinds of things. But then on the administrative side, we mess up a lot of stuff. We start to look at how this cloud business is growing. We see all of these kinds of services in here. Some of you are familiar with Salesforce. They used to make fun of that company. They bought a company called ExactTarget, which is part of their marketing program. Most folks, unless you read 10-Ks, you don't realize how big Amazon's web services are. But if you watch what pages are loading when you're online, you see that little AWS, that's them. It's almost every website that you go to. In fact, Dropbox is hosted at Amazon Web Services. You can now do phone service. Very sophisticated business phone systems can now be delivered via cloud. FreshBooks is a billing service. Intuit, which a lot of small printers still use QuickBooks, now delivered $20 or so a month as a service online. You save yourself a lot of problems with this. That little odd thing that's there up in the upper left-hand corner, that's HubSpot. That's one of those marketing automation businesses. Google, of course, is very big in this area. Google Documents, some of you may have been using, but it's a lot more than those obvious ones like doing word processing online. Virtually every business function that you can think of, either managing human resources, finance, inventory ordering, purchasing functions, can all be done now on a cloud basis. And there's good reason to start looking at this as an industry. First of all, our investment capital is very scarce, and we should be focusing that investment capital on productive capabilities, not necessarily administrative ones. So we want to be able to have as much investment capital as we can deployed in the revenue creation and the margin creation sides of our business. And that means that we might be able to start streamlining a variety of things in the back room operations using some of these services. In some sense, that may also make us a little more attractive to for acquirers or consolidators. The more that they see us using standardized services, the more they're going to realize that a lot of the transition between two businesses, trying to reconcile two different accounting systems and all those kinds of things, start to go by the wayside. It may make it easier for them to do that. It also shifts costs from an upfront, a fixed investment, such as computer space and staffing. I've heard a lot of complaints from printers over the years, but one of my favorite ones is, I never thought we'd have to hire so many programmers. I never thought printers complaining about hiring programmers. Sometimes I think it's a cultural thing because their hours are different. They work when they can, when spirit moves them many times. But you're looking for something scalable, predictable, and has a variable cost. Rather than buying a computer center or buying a lot of computer hardware, you're benefiting from all this stuff. You're benefiting from all that stuff with companies that are really specializing in security and other aspects of especially backup that can just drive you absolutely nuts. So we've been needing a boost for many of our backroom operations because I believe still the pressure on pricing of print is still relentless from digital media. prices will not be getting better. You're going to improve it some with the business development stuff. But in the long run, technology, you saw the lines. The technology is still going to be something that we got to compete with. You can reduce office space by creating any place can be an office at any time. You're using standardized equipment. You don't have to worry about compatibility the way you do now, because everything's through a browser. It doesn't even have to be through the same browser. Collaboration is a lot easier. Collaboration has always been this thing that folks have held out to us. Well, you can collaborate on file manipulation and stuff like that. And for years I've been telling them that was crazy. Now it looks like you might be able to actually do those kinds of things. And it shifts the risk. You do not want I would rather have technology risk in my production capabilities than in my accounting capabilities, because I'm not in the accounting department. Production is the way we're going to differentiate ourselves in the marketplace, because that's where we create things of value. So this shifts that technology risk to mainstream functions to someone else and gives it to a specialist. So this is the business that we're trying to develop, because all these there's so many of these services. It's like there's a new one funded every day by a venture company. These things are challenging to identify the right one and to get them all to work with each other. It's a lot easier than it used to be, but you want to offload as much of this as you can so you can concentrate on your business. So if you have any interest in this, please go to that contact page or give me your business card, or give your business card to Slava for that. But let's summarize where we've been and some of the things that I've scared you about over this last hour, right? I did scare some of you appropriately. I didn't, not doing, why are you nodding? That's behind you. He's saying no. Could you check his pulse or something?
Well. Yeah? I'm saying no as well.
Oh, you are? Okay. But you said no in the U.S. way, which is...
Oh, that's right.
All right, so in summary, that's why I have this slide up, because I'm summarizing. Print is part of media, and its role is not just as a standalone. Its role is to work with other media. That's what media integration is all about. We have no control the way we used to of when someone's going to look at our stuff. That's what publishing was involved in. They knew that if they put it in this format, it'd be sent to this person, they would open it, that's what it would be. But now we have no clue when someone is accessing information in the format, the time, the place, and the nature of what's around them. So the whole nature of media is been turned on its head. Digital media has extremely low cost, but a lot of those costs are wasted because they're not accessed. So how can print change that so their total cost of communications actually comes down? Media have increased. That chart that I had, some of that was a tease, but it's all stuff that's absolutely true. All those things exist. So deciding what to use at a particular time is difficult. There's a whole new emphasis on media planning, and it's all tied in with the whole ROI thing. Those are tough decisions. And small businesses don't know that they have those decisions to make or that they can be coordinated. That's something of real value that we can give to them. Our industry has always liked consolidation because it makes really great headlines in some industry publications, but it's actually a way that our entire industry and all the media industry reallocates its capital. Be on the right side of it and be forward-looking about it. Get rid of that rear-view mirror. We are evolving to a different way that we interact with other folks in our own business. And that's the alliance. We're moving from a task-based or program-based or project-based to a more strategic base where we're sharing our capital. Because very often we cannot devote enough capital to make a strategic move. I've had great respect for printers over the years because I know that they realize they have to change. But getting out from a lot of the financial things that they've been stuck with, that's their hurdle. It's not the fact that they change is not their hurdle. The hurdle is gathering the right resources together. And so by having alliances, we can reconfigure the capital structure of our business so they can actually do that. Because if we're going to be successful as an industry, the last item is very important. We need to rediscover the entrepreneurial spirit in our business. We need to be more comfortable doing that. We're always looking for what have people done in the past, that rearview mirror. This is a time for new stuff. And this is a time for new relationships. And it's not just working with print buyers, but the people who were above them, who are making bigger media decisions that they are just reacting to. The more we understand about what the objectives are of communications, and also what are the strategic objectives of our overall clients, the better off we're going to be. The underlying aspect of all this is knowing what ROI is for that particular customer, creating ways and approaches that they did not think of themselves in order to reach and exceed that particular ROI, and developing a relationship with those clients based on the overall value of a long-term relationship, so that we get out of a lot of the traditional things that have dogged us for, which is, here's my business card, here's my list of equipment. That doesn't go anymore. We have to understand, what are your objectives? I don't know why I'm visiting your company today, but your company seems to be doing something interesting. Tell me something about it. What are you doing? What products do you make? What are your markets? What are your objectives for the next 5 years? Maybe I can think of a way that we might be able to help you. That's the kind of relationship that we want with them. Many of these thoughts are summarized in here, being, it's the same thing. Printed on, but it just, that's just the facsimile. This is the real thing. I read the book, I saw the picture, right? This is being sold outside, it's $20. And this is one of the few times you're going to see this book in color. If you buy this on Amazon, it's in black and white. If you buy it in the Kindle version, it's in black and white. But this has been run in full color just here at this show by Konica Minolta. I want to thank you folks very, very much. The job came out extremely well. And it discusses many of these aspects of this. And it looks at the whole idea of this point forward is that, you know, our history is only important to us. Our new clients, those younger executives, they're looking for results for their particular company. And while our history is important, might give a sense of, you know, I'm dealing with an established company, you know, they're not that interested in that. They really want someone who's going to understand their business and give them something special that they can't get elsewhere. So this is an approach to doing that. So I want to thank you very, very much for coming today. And I get to do this again tomorrow in case it didn't sink in. I always say, I'll do this totally different with different slides. I'll tell them exactly the opposite of what I told you folks today. But I really appreciate you coming. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them. I'm not going to entertain you any other way than other than questions. So.
Are you going to copy the presentation?
Yes, we will get these out somehow. I'll work with Mr. Mulcahy to do it. He got scared, so he left. So I'll make sure that those get out. But if you need something urgently, just leave me your business card, and I'll make sure I get you a PDF as soon as I get back to some connectivity. Yes, sir?
Is it safe to assume that you're in favor of cross-media marketing, and how do you feel printers are taking that application?
I never liked the phrase cross-media marketing because in all practically it was serial deployment of images that we did in the other medium. But today, cross-media, I always look for simultaneous deployment. That's one of the things that responsive design of web pages gives us. We get simultaneous deployment of the same messages across many, many devices. That's what I've always felt cross-media was. So in a lot of ways, I never felt our industry was participating in cross-media development in the way it should. And you occasionally hear the phrase multi-channel marketing or integrated marketing. You know, that gets a little bit closer. We may have been more involved with that, you know, digital printing and pearls and those kinds of things. That got a little closer. But we've never been in the true simultaneous deployment. So that's I think that answers your question. Yes. Someone else. Everyone wants a drink, right? Is that the deal that we're waiting for? Well, thank you again very much. If you want to, you can clap whenever you like.